buy these cars, you know, they drive Toyota Corollas and Honda Accords, and they expect that that reliability is going to be in a Porsche. But you have to realize that Porsche's top priority is performance. At least that's my opinion on it. And if you want, if your top priority for you when buying a car is reliability, then you need to go buy a Toyota Corolla. But if you want a high performance sports car,
you know,
you're right. I mean, a lot of people could never afford these cars are saying this is my one time, but they rush into it. These are, I would say, in my opinion, I know you agree, but you see the thing with, and I'm talking to the audience right now, you know, Jake works with the worst case scenario. So when people bring him cars, it's because there's a reason for it. It's because it's broken.
Well, yeah. And I mean, the other thing is I get a ton of tickets that are like, my car doesn't have any symptoms. I don't know what to do. And I've got canned replies for all this stuff. I have to. We get hundreds of messages a week. And I answer all of them. They all gets answered within 24 hours in the submissions ticket program at flat6innovations.com. But what I'm getting at is you said a lot of people, you know, they can afford the cars now, but they can't. They can't afford to own the car. They can afford to buy the car.
Exactly.
But
that's what I mean.
The buying portion of it is only about half of it, right? I mean, I can't tell you how many times I bought this car and 3 weeks later, boom. I just delivered one to a guy in Alabama. He just got the car yesterday. And he loves it. He sent us a message. It's one that I built the engine here at my facility, at my place, and I put it in the car. You know, every now and then I take on some customers that I think are people that I really see eyeball to eyeball with, and I do their job myself. They can't ask me for that, but it's something where if I think somebody is really cool and I'm on the same page with them and I can tell them all the things that I normally couldn't tell somebody, you know, about the way I believe in things or whatever. If you're one of those people, then I'm more apt to want to work with you directly and handle everything with you. And that's one reason why I like this business that I started. So nobody can tell me what the hell to do.
That's another thing.
I just delivered it back to him. And, you know, it's one of those scenarios where he's blown away, but he bought the car in Florida. He drove it home, had a drive out tag on it. It failed before he owned it for 24 hours. Then he turns right around. He's in love with it. It's a C4S, and he pays me like $24,000 for an engine. Bam.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, they vent a little bit too much, and they act so surprised. And I don't think these are garbage cars. I think that it's just a reality of a high-performance sports car like the 911. You better do your homework. Like you said, we can right now, these cars are so cheap, especially the Boxster and the Cayman, they go rush out and buy it, and they have not done their homework on what it takes to keep these engines alive, you know.
Yeah, so I've got a video I'm going to try. We haven't tried this before, but this is a video of when that car came to me, and we're basically unloading it off the truck. I'm going to try to play this video. Give me one second here. Okay, so this is the car that I was talking about, the C4S. It's an 04 C4S, and it's diagnosed with bore scoring. It also has a lot of debris in the oil, and you can see that it actually has the drive-out tag on it where he purchased it from the dealer in Florida, drove it home to Alabama, owned it for one day, and then the engine failed, and he brought it to us. So that's pretty much it. So that drive-out tag was actually 4.7 of 20. That's how common, or actually how recent this is. So
yeah, and so this is a case where the owner bought it as is, where he is too. And did they do a pre-purchase inspection on it, or what was the case there?
Yeah, I mean, he did. I want to have him on the show. Either the dealer that he bought it from did a PPI themselves, or he took it to somewhere, or he didn't do a PPI at all. I think when he got the car home, it started making some noises, and he Googled a couple of things. He found our videos. He bought a borescope. He diagnosed it himself, and then he called me. That's pretty much what happened. But, you know, had he done a PPI that was done by somebody that actually knew what they were doing and knew what to look for, they would have found that, and he could have got a different car. And that car also had some other problems. I mean, they sold it to him with a nail in the tire, and then they also sold it to him without the AC working. And, you know, all the flapper doors and all that mixing boxes and stuff in the dash was screwed up. It's blowing foam everywhere. The AC compressor won't even kick on.
That's a common problem. I believe, I want to say Mercedes uses the same blend door, the foam.
Yeah.
So it's more for, it affects people during the winter months. So if you're in a cold environment, like up north, it would drive you nuts because basically it's pouring in too much coal and, you know, you're not generating enough heat through the coal and the heater core. And so, yeah, what's the byproduct of that? They, you know, you get the foam blowing and then you're totally screwed. So what a lot of people do is either go in there and cut a hole in there and put some, you know, like some tape over it or something, you know, to block those holes. But it's a real bad problem for people that are up north, you know, during the winter. There is a workaround, and maybe someday we can do a little short video and show how people can get by until they have the blend doors repaired. But it is repairable. But it is such a common problem. I can't tell you how many times I see a thread that says, I'm getting foam coming through my vents. What's going on? You know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's something that happens when we go drive these cars. I mean, basically everything up to the 997 and 987 does it. I haven't had any of the 05 or newer stuff do it, but all the older stuff does it, and it does it badly. So anyway, I know we got to wrap things up here. So do you have any questions?
I wanted to read some questions from our viewers. They have sent us comments on YouTube, and you're welcome to do it that way. You can also contact us as well if you want to, either on Facebook or, you know, you can email us as well if you want to through Facebook. But probably the easiest way is just put your question in the comment section on YouTube, and we'll try to address it in one of our episodes. So the first question comes from a Lynn Poole, and she's talking about cylinder bore scoring. And so I'm reading into this a little bit. I'm assuming they're looking at a car, and she's asking, can an individual inspect the bores? Lots of folks won't even let you drive the car off to have it inspected. What should we take the owner with us? So I guess I'm reading into this, and the person's probably in the market for one of these cars. Maybe this is a wife of her husband wants one of these cars. And so she's concerned about cylinder bore scoring. So what I see her implying is, they won't even hardly let us drive it off. Will they let us inspect the cylinder bore? So what would you recommend? Just not deal with cars that they won't let you take a pre-purchase inspection? Or,
well, I mean, it's a huge catch 22, right? I mean, because, you know, you want to buy a car, they want to sell the car. You don't want to get ripped off, and you don't know if they want to rip you off or not. That's the problem. Because now we've instructed so many people about how to find this problem, shops and individuals alike, that they can go in and look at it. They can find it before there's any symptoms. Then the person goes ahead and they get rid of the car. They pass it on to the next guy to get screwed. Now, that's something with air-cooled Porsche world. We never saw that. Never happened. I can't think of that ever happening one time. Same thing in old Volkswagens. Never seen that happen. But today's modern human, they'll pass it on to the next guy, no problem. There's no morals or ethics anymore. As long as the guy that currently owns it doesn't have to pay for it, he doesn't really give a damn about the next guy. But the problem is, if you run into a situation like that, if you're buying it from a dealer, a lot of times they want their shop to do the PPI. Well, that is basically worthless, because do you think they're going to show anything that is going to hurt one of their, probably a big customer of that shop that they're doing the work for? No. So then you need to either take it to a third party and have it done, or you need to, try to let the person, at least let you plug your durimetric in or something like that. Look for cam deviations, look for misfires, look for weird things, let you draw an oil sample and send it in. I mean, but there's only so much you can do. These sellers, most of the time, they don't understand these things. And a lot of times, they're getting rid of the car because they're afraid of it. These cars should not be, you should not be afraid of this car. It is an excellent, wonderful vehicle. It has an engine problem. They can be expensive. Buy a car and get a PPI, or if nothing else, buy one that's already broken and then call me up and buy an engine. We have people do that all the time. They buy broken cars. If anybody is looking, I actually know where a 2004 996 Cabriolet C4 is with one of my 4-liter engines in it, and it's for sale, and the engine's almost new. But anyway, that's just beside the fact. It's a scenario where there's really no winner because nobody's trusting each other, and you really can't, because if you're the buyer, you're thinking the guy's going to rip you off. If you're the seller, then you think the guy's going to steal your car when he comes to do a PPI, or he's going to damage it or whatever. You know, the best way to handle it, if you're a good seller of one of these cars, you stay attuned to the problems, you go ahead and you have your shop do a PPI on that car, collect the photos of the bores, photo document everything with videos or whatever, showing the date, take a picture of the newspaper, whatever you got to do, it shows it on your phone too, and that acts as a sales tool. Spend a few $100, get it done first. That helps you know that you're selling a car in good faith, which is a big deal to me. And it also is going to make it where those people don't have to ask you for that. And you can ask a premium for your car if you do that, because the smartest purchasers are the ones with the deepest pockets and the ones that don't want a freaking problem. Okay. Mm-hmm. So go ahead and do that. That is the major answer to that question. It lies in the seller to have foresight and forethought and do something that he probably never had to do before.
Sounds good. Okay, so the next question is on kind of similar. The username is Kerosene Films. Jake, thank you for continuing to share this information. I'm looking at Boxsters of all generations. First of all, he spells it Boxster, like a boxer. He needs to put an S in there, but I think he just conveniently dropped that one. common misspell. But he says he's looking at Boxsters of all generations. He says, of course, the value proposition of the 986 is appealing. But from what I read on the Flat 6 website, am I correct in assuming that all base model Boxsters, 986 and 987, do not suffer from cylinder bore scoring?
Yeah, I mean, and they don't. Boxster's got a different piston. That piston made a difference. They just don't have the problem. They have IMS bearing problems. Sometimes early Boxster S's will eat camshafts and lifters. Of course, they have the problems with these freaking things here with the wear pads. But from a bore scoring perspective, I think I might have seen one case, but I think debris got in and caused it. But the only Boxster that has the problem with it is the 07 and 08. Starting in 07, the Boxster got the M9721 engine, which was the Cayman S engine that came with variable valve timing plus, which added lift as well as timing adjustment changes. And that basically made it where it had all the same problems as a Cayman. And we find a lot of Caymans, M9721, Cayman S's, that have the problem. The base Cayman, nope. Base Cayman has the other style pistons, and they don't wear the cylinders. It just doesn't happen.
I might have just missed that that last point that you just made, but there's another user, Sergio Nito, is asking, is the 2006 Boxster S with the M96.226 affected by cylinder bore scoring?
So the M9626 and M9625 are both a very odd and somewhat rare engine designation. They were both basically 1 year only, each one of those. And no, I do not find problems with those. That would be your, you know, your 05 and your 06 Boxster S. And no, I don't, we don't have problems with those. They just don't, they don't have the problem.
That's good. That's good. Okay. This is from user Life is Good. Jake, my 2006 Cayman S just recently started a faint but high-pitched ticking at startup. Then it slowly gets quiet and disappears at full operation. I've had the car for 4 years and it changes the oil every 25,000 miles with a Mobil 1 040. I know what you're going to say about that one. And on and on and on and on. He, you know, he's just going and he takes care of it. And he says the ticking is similar to what you've shown in the bore scoring series. So he's just asking any advice on that.
Well, okay, so you said 25,000 miles is oil service interval?
2,500, I'm sorry.
If okay, I said
2,500.
Okay,
2,500 mile.
Okay.
He changes it with and uses Mobil 1, a 040.
Okay. Well, I mean,
I know you don't.
That's a liquid economic stimulus for us here,
yeah,
at Flat Six. I'm done telling people what to use for oil. The way I look at it, use what you want to use, and just make sure you keep my phone number. It's almost like I would like to do what Porsche has done by putting the Mobil sticker in the engine bay. I would like to somehow put my number on the bottle of Mobil oil. Right? How many millions would that cost? Okay, but what I'm getting at is, you know, and use what you want to use. I don't care. I mean,
yeah,
it is what,
yeah,
it is. There was a time when this stuff was great, and there's still some flavors of that oil that we don't have a problem with. It's not the 040, okay, but there are still some flavors that are okay. Some of the motorcycle oil, yeah, it's okay. And there are some attributes to that stuff. It's hard to get any other oil that will make as much horsepower as that oil will. And also, and one reason for that is because a 40 grade acts like a 30 grade. So your 040, it really acting like a 030. And it actually tests that way, very close to a 30 grade instead of a 40. So it's so thin that you end up not really having a horsepower loss. And it's also good for fuel economy. Those are two things it's good for. The other thing it's good for is creating oil leaks, which is another liquid economic stimulus for us, because they're like, oh, this thing's leaking oil. Yeah, take that oil out, replace it with something else, and a lot of times those leaks will stop. And I've had that happen with a lot of different engines. But with this particular guy, you know, he's clearly watched the videos. He understands the ticking noise, blah, blah, blah. A Cayman is a little bit harder to get more symptoms from because it has a central tailpipe. So it doesn't really have the one tailpipe on the left and one on the right, so you can compare them. Sometimes you can get a bit of a comparison, you know, by looking up inside that bifurcation, if you will, and seeing kind of what it looks like further up in the muffler. But, you know, he clearly has a car that's at risk. He's been changing the oil very frequently, but the thing is, changing the oil doesn't really help bore scoring. We've already found that out. Either you have an engine that's going to do it or it's not. And you can't really avoid it. It's too late in the game.
So the best advice would be what? For him to examine the cylinder bores through your technique?
Well, that, or, you know, the other thing is get with Speed Diagnostics and get a oil sample kit. Don't use anybody else. Their commentary is going to be laughable. But Speed Diagnostics has helped us develop all these testing regimens. And they have all the samples. And basically, it's one of those things where when they have an engine, it looks like it has bore scoring. They'll sometimes bring me in on it and say, Jake, do you think this has got bore scoring? I look at it and I can see viscosity's down. Fuel intrusion is up. The anti-wear package is depleted because it's got mechanical wear and you have fuel getting by the piston rings, unburned fuel, contaminating the oil, thereby cutting the viscosity and killing the ability of the oil to maintain that film strength. So, yeah, I see this. I also see that aluminum and silicon are up, okay? Now, not always are you going to see that. Sometimes the particles get too big for you to notice. But early on, like this guy is, if he does have bore scoring, he should be able to pick up on high silicon, high aluminum, low viscosity, and an anti-wear package that's depleted. But these are things that normal people don't look at. Okay, you notice I really didn't mention any other wear metals. Everybody wants me to look at oil samples, wear metals. I don't look at that first. That's like looking at a dyno graph and looking at peak horsepower first. Only a fool does that. If I hand somebody a dyno graph and I watch their eyes go all the way to peak horsepower, give up. This dude's lost. He knows nothing. He's a dyno geek. He doesn't know how to read or perceive the graph, okay? That's 90% of the people out there. If I hand somebody a dyno graph and I see their eyes start at the bottom and they're like, man, this thing's in a huge torque plateau and look at this. That dude got it. He understands that horsepower is a derivative of torque, okay? But these oil samples are the same way. Everybody spends too much time looking at just wear metals. I look at viscosity. We look at oxidation levels. You know, in the old days, we looked at TBN and TAN. We also look at the anti-wear package. And pretty much to me, aluminum and silicon are the things that I'm paying attention to from a contaminants perspective. And that's it for bore scoring. But yeah, I would say for this particular fellow, buy that $40 bore scope that we used on the Amazon video, on the bore scoring video on YouTube, and send us a sample of that Noble Nun to Speed Diagnostics.
Oh my, that's funny. Yeah. Well, I hate to end the question and answer segment with another oil question, but it doesn't have anything to do with Mobil 1, thank goodness. Of course, this is more of a rant than anything else, but it would be good to kind of comment. The guy is Thomas Bassett, and he was watching bore scoring part 6. He's saying a quart of oil every 1,000 miles is ridiculous. That is a Porsche defect and should be repaired by Porsche. Any vehicle that consumes a quart of oil every 1,000 miles was built to drive on the street is poorly designed and should be treated as an unfit for the road and considered a lemon for which you should be able to get your money back.
Well, okay, so the Porsche directive, according to the year model and what submodel of the car
is... 600 miles, isn't it?
It can be as much as 1 liter every 620 miles.
Yeah.
Okay. Or every 1,000 kilometers is 620 miles, so a liter per 1,000 kilometers. Now, that's what basically these cars have been at. If you go back and look at a lot of the air-cooled cars, they were kind of there too. You know, look at old Volkswagens and you look at other stuff. Horizontally opposed engines tend to consume more oil than a V8 or an inline engine because things are out horizontally opposed and you have a hard time getting the oil back to the sump sometimes. The rings tend to get a little more pickled, if you know what I mean. To me, a quart per 1,000 is normal. That's normal and expected from one of these. A lot of times when I build like a stage 1 or stage 2 performer, when an engine is completely broken in, it will be at that quart per 1,000. I call that perfect. As long as we're not seeing contamination levels and oxidation levels in the oil samples, that tells us that a lot of that is not getting by the rings. It's actually occurring in other ways. And most of that's the air oil separator. Air oil separator is responsible for a majority of oil consumption with these engines. If you take off the tube that runs from the air oil separator up to the intake plenum, even with a healthy AOS, you will find oil in there. It's going to get by it some. And then it goes in the intake and it burns it. Okay? So that's why the AOS is an emissions component. But to me, it actually kind of creates emissions because it makes things do that. So I don't think that's ludicrous at all. I think that it's normal and expected. Some people will go 5,000 miles and it won't burn a quart. Ironically, a lot of times we see those have bore scoring. Okay? Like they'll be at a quart of every 5,000. The guy's like, oh, I don't even need to change mine. It's not doing anything. Well, you got one that's doing that. But all of a sudden, it starts to consume oil, starts making ticking sounds, and now you got bore scoring and it gets to the point where it's eating a quart every 300 miles. But yeah, the Porsche directive is 1 liter every 1,000 kilometers.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks there, it's that old school mentality. Oh, you know, it always was negative when you're pulling up behind some guy with an old car from the 60s or the 70s and smoking like a freight train. And then somebody in the car would say, oh, that thing's burning oil. It was always the mindset that it was, you know, it's a negative thing.
Well, I want you to,
but if you look at any of these,
pay attention. Yeah, do this. Pay attention to how many modern cars smoke in front of you. Okay, pay attention to it. If you sit at a traffic light, you sit at a stop sign, you're sitting in traffic, watch the car's tailpipes in front of you. There'll be brand new cars that smoke, okay? I think a lot of that is from the fuel we're burning today and the fact that most engine manufacturers are having problems with low-speed pre-ignition. They're having problems with other things created by the fuel and the oils that we're using and all these emissions devices and all this crap. If you really want to see these things smoke, take the cats off of them. The cats are filters, okay? Pull the cats off one of these things. They will smoke a lot more, okay? Pull the cat off of a lot of other cars. It'll do the same thing. But, you know, I think a lot of people have engines that consume oil, and they just don't realize it. They don't check the oil. They just don't. I mean, I know people that have shops. People show up, they drop their car off to have the oil changed, and it only had a quart and a half or 2 quarts in the damn thing. You know, happens all the time. I mean, people are lazy. They think that everything should be done for them, right? This is the 21st century. How dare me have to use that thing like a dipstick or pay attention to this stupid little gauge that tells me an inaccurate reading like every time I use it? That's effort. I shouldn't have to do that. I'm entitled to a vehicle that basically runs and maintains itself because it's 2020. And that's just the way it is.
Well, it's you know, people freak out, you know, if you even read the manual.
Which is wrong. The manual tells you the worst way.
Normal, yeah. It's normal for a Porsche to consume oil. It's even in the – so it's kind of funny that people go off on that. But anyway.
All right, next.
Okay, I'd like to end our – Rencast this time with some news and announcements. It's really a pleasure to announce that you can listen to Rencast now in podcasting form on Spotify, Anchor Radio, Radio Public, Google Podcasts, and hopefully will be approved for Apple iTunes in the upcoming future. So for those that would prefer just to listen to Rencast, you can do that through those platforms. Also, we had the honor of speaking with Eric Goodman from Vintage Volkswagen Club of America, and we're going to be doing some really special episodes with him. Jake, do you want to talk a little bit about your involvement with Vintage Volkswagen Club of America?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Rencast is it's a speed cast, right? It's about anything that's fast and sometimes not fast. Like it can be a military vehicle, an old Volkswagen, whatever. But, you know, Eric has taken over about a year ago, the Vintage Volkswagen Club. Basically, I was appointed as the chief technical director, and I've been writing some cool articles, and I answer a lot of questions on the Facebook page. I remain an absolute huge Volkswagen lover. I probably drive Volkswagens more than I do Porsches. Just drove my Volkswagen Iltis tonight for a little tour Ava and I did. And, you know, Vintage Volkswagen Club of America has been around since 1976. And there's about 40,000 members. It's a big club. And, you know, the Facebook page gets tons of hits. And people are very enthusiastic about old Volkswagens. And the vehicles are gaining value. And most of the people that listen to this show that have a Porsche will also have a Volkswagen. Are they in market for an old Volkswagen? I mean, I used to say that Porsches, they were nothing more than a Volkswagen with a good heater. Because when I first got my 912E, that's the way I looked at it. It had a Volkswagen engine in it, but it had those 923 heater boxes on it that are freaking awesome. That's the first car I ever owned that had heat.
That's great.
Until 2007, I had never driven a a car that wasn't air-cooled, whether it's a Volkswagen bus or a truck or a Bug or my 912E. I didn't have a car that wasn't air-cooled. And I always froze my ass off because you have no heat, usually. But the Porsche had good heat. It smelled like oil the way it's supposed to, but it had good heat. So Eric has done a great amount with that. He's got the club is doing things it's never done before. The club has negotiated good deals with Hagerty on insurance, classic car insurance. If you're a member of Vintage Volkswagen Club and you have Hagerty insurance, they will give you a huge, if you will, discount of like 10% on your whole fleet of cars. Like I've got 31 cars with Hagerty, and they gave me 10% across the board on all those vehicles just because I had the Vintage Volkswagen Club of America membership and I had old Volkswagens.
And I've heard that Hagerty is actually real competitive. In fact, can do a lot better with these classic cars and the high-end sports cars than, say, your normal insurance companies. And so what you'll find is you would think that since it's such an exclusive company, you would think that their prices would be a little bit more. But what people are telling me is that the insurance costs are actually less than compared to your mainstream insurance companies. But it'll be good to get Eric here on the show, and so we can hear from him firsthand about things that are going on. And I look forward to bringing in a whole lot of guests from the Vintage Volkswagen group to talk about cool things that they're doing with those cars. Those cars are just, like you said last time, everybody has a Volkswagen story. And so to hear from some of the owners and some of the people that are actually working in the industry will be really, really, really fun. So I'm looking forward to getting Eric Goodman here on the show and seeing what's going on with the club. Another person that we're going to be teaming up with here on the show is Lake Speed Jr. Now, anybody who knows Lake Speed knows his family's background in NASCAR. And Lake was, most people connect Lake with Driven Racing Oil. But now Lake is taking a new position with Total Seal Piston Company, if I got that right. Is that right? Is
yeah,
that correct,
Seal,
Jake?
Total Seal Piston Rings. And you know, he's still using his tribology skills and all those things with his new job at Total Seal. He's already helped us with some profiles for our R43 and R44, our 4.3 and 4.4 liter engines. And we're actually making some huge strides and making more power with that same kind of technology in the R40 4 liter series and the R38 as well. You know, the whole oil thing and piston rings go hand in hand because the piston ring's job is there to seal the cylinder up, and that keeps the oil clean. Okay. Good example of that is gear oil you put in your gearbox is good for 30,000 plus miles. You can drain it out and it's still clear after 30,000 miles. Okay. Because it has no combustion contaminants going on, right? As long as you don't have debris getting by the seals from the outside, water or whatever, you're not really going to have dirty gearbox oil or differential oil. Engines aren't that way. The oil turns black, you know, quickly if you have poor ring seal. That's one way we can see if an engine has cylinder bore scoring. If the engine oil is very black, that's because you've got carbon deposits making it by the rings and contaminating the oil. So, you know, him working from both sides of that, both a lubrication side of it, where he's a certified oil analyst, you know, and a lubrication specialist. He's one of 200 people in the world, I believe, actually. It is
like
both those dual.
He's like a certified tribologist, or I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but that's a pretty specialized discipline that studies lubrication, friction, wear, and all on components and stuff. So I think that Lake could also bring a lot of insight into modern oils and how they impact the cars that, you know, like the new engines that have direct injection and the whole LSPI situation and how you can combat that with good lubrication. But also
even
with
the old stuff, you know, the old cars too. I mean, we just, before he left, driven racing oil, we came up with a military vehicle oil. Most of my military vehicles run a straight 30 or a straight 40 oil. You can't find an SAE 30 or 40 that's worth a damn anymore. It has no zinc in it. And people use it for like air compressors and stuff like that. I mean, it literally, everything sucks. So we made a high zinc, high phosphorus formulation of an MV oil, military vehicle oil, and did it a 40 grade. I put it in seven of my vehicles in the last 2 weeks, and it made a huge difference. So even old engines can really come in to their own by using application-specific oil. But now he's working at it from the piston ring side, where he's trying to develop a piston ring and a profile that keeps the oil clean. That's the ring's job, is to keep the oil clean, seal the cylinder up, make compression, not leak down. That's the thing. And piston rings, man, been around as long as the engine's been around. And it amazes me how Total Seal can keep on developing based on the fact that we've already done everything, right? I mean, you think it's all been tried. And we learn new stuff all the time. Like one thing that Lake's going to do, we're going to do a talk about, if you're an engine builder, how to check your piston rings and make sure that you basically can do a light check. We introduce ambient light behind the ring. We put the ring square on the bore. We look to make sure that ring is touching the cylinder all the way around. And I just found some rings that weren't from Total Seal that were problematic. And if I would have built an engine with those, it would have been a big deal. You could see light all the way around the second ring. And that second ring, 80% of oil control comes from that second ring. So that engine would have consumed oil. But again, they weren't Total Seals. Most all my engines do get Total Seals. So next week, Lake will be here with us. We'll talk about oil. We'll talk about piston rings. We'll talk about Lake's dad. He was a NASCAR driver. He actually won the World Karting Championship back in the 70s. He's the only American to have ever won it. He actually took it away from a guy named Senna, who most everybody that follows Formula One and everything else knows the name Senna. And Lake's dad spanked him. So, and they still race. They still race vintage cars, old two-stroke stuff. So he's even developed two-stroke oil. So Lake will be with us. He's a wealth of knowledge. And like us, everything that he has learned has been firsthand, direct experience. We are basically students of experience. And that's one reason why he and I get along so well. We don't really give a damn what the book says. We don't care what the engineers say. We don't care what the chemists say. We either learn it ourselves or we experience it, or it didn't happen.
Sounds good, Jake. Thank you so much. And I wanted to thank our audience for listening to another RenCast. And I want to encourage our audience to please consider subscribing here on YouTube, as well as like us. And come follow us on Facebook. And we'll see you again next time. Thank you so much.